AmericanWireTalk.com and listen anywhere through the TuneIn Radio app. From elected officials, community leaders, small business owners, school district representatives, and charitable causes, Speak Out is here for you on KNTR Talk. The year was 1968, and the automotive industry was in a panic mode, looking for a prototype crash dummy that could be used as an average male, large male, and small female. Who did the brilliant minds of American ingenuity turn to?
The police!
Recent historical records have surfaced proving Alexander Graham Bell's first telephone call in 1876 was not his assistant, Mr. Watson, but to...
The police!
Asking him to order Chinese. Ladies and gentlemen, fresh from a crash test at Yucca Proving Grounds, your host, Paul Lavoie.
All right, welcome to Speak Out. It is Monday, July 6th, 2026. And how was your 4th of July, Jim Russell?
4th of July was good. We got the fireworks all successfully imported, protected, and finally discharged. And
oh, you were out there. You were at Piccadilly Point?
TSM handled it.
Okay. I wasn't sure this year if were or not.
We didn't produce any festival.
Okay.
But because of our relationship with the pyrotechnics company and such, we did that for the city.
I watched it from my balcony.
Uh-huh.
It was amazing.
Was it a good show?
I grabbed some KFC as a normal Paulie would, right?
Uh-huh.
Very good. You know my pronouns, right?
Uh-huh.
He, him, and hungry.
Yes.
All right. I don't know if my guest knows that yet, but I'm not sure if he remembers that or not. But we have the esteemed gentleman from Arizona, Congressional District 5, Congressman Andy Biggs, who is also running for governor of Arizona. Welcome to Speak Out. Well, I should say welcome back. How are you, Andy Biggs?
I'm great, Paul, and great to be with you too, Jim. Good to be with both of you.
Thank you.
What do you think of those pronouns, he, him, and hungry? I'm always hungry, so when people go, how are you, I say, I'm hungry. That makes it a pronoun, right?
You can be anything you want in today's world, apparently. So,
well said.
Have at it, brother. Have at it, man.
That's funny. I just got a text on our KNTR Talk text line, and it was super, super, super long, but they were upset about the Daughters of the American Revolution allowing trans women into the organization. I mean, is there no end to this madness, Andy?
I saw that last week and I thought, that's about as nutty as you get. I mean, trust me, the founders and the revolution era folks would have a real tough time understanding boys who want to be called daughters of the revolution. That would blow their mind. Blow their minds.
What's really ironic about all that, I just finished watching John Adams. It's my July 4th tradition. Every year.
Great.
I'll watch all 7 parts, right?
Good for you.
From beginning to end. Always, always, always. But they dressed a little fruity, Andy. Come on, man. You got to admit, the wigs and everything.
Stylish. Yeah. Merely stylish.
That's
merely stylish, my friend.
That's very true. All right, let's get a little serious here. So you are running for governor, but you're also in the conservative wing of the Republican Party in the U.S. House. So what led you to say, okay, you know what, I'm going to give up all of these leadership seats that I have in the House, and it's just not worth it in Washington anymore. I want to go back and run my home state. How did you come to that decision?
There are two aspects to it. Number one, under the current governor, I think the direction Arizona is going is precipitously close to landing in a California state of mind. And I thought, we've got to stop that, number one. And number two, I'm looking at Congress, and you can go back and watch. One of the things I did yesterday, or July 4th, is to watch Ronald Reagan's 1963 speech.
Nice.
And you watch that, and he's talking about there's been 36 out of 40 years or something like that they haven't balanced their budget and massive deficit. And I thought, holy smokes, we have had a $2 trillion deficit per year. Mm-hmm. And we, on the conservative wing, and now we actually expanded it. We got some of the moderates to come along with us. We had 90 people, and we still can't slow them down or get them to even do the budget the way the law requires. And I'm just like, well, we need to – Congress may be irredeemable. It really may be. But we've got to get our state ready for any kind of potential fail on the part of the federal government. And that's really kind of where I am. Let's get here. Let's fix our state. I think if the country's going to be saved, it's going to be at the state level that saves them.
Why do you say Congress may be irredeemable? What does that mean to Andy Biggs?
It means to me that some of us got in there. We were able to change the structure. We were able to change some of the leadership personnel. And those were subsumed. So the structure itself, that lasted about 6 to 7 months. Mm-hmm. And then the leadership personnel, they get sucked into the vortex of the uniparty or the swamp that President Trump talks about, where you got special interests that seem to control them. I mean, so why have the Republicans raised more money than ever? Well, it's good that we're raising more money than ever, but look at who's supplying us the funds, and will they ever let us to make allow us to make changes in the policies that go with those? And it becomes really a question of, can you make changes that are substantive enough to preserve the nation, or are we just managing the decline of the nation?
I want to stay with that thought on a national level for right now, and we'll talk about the state later, of course, but let's talk about the SAVE Act. It seems like everybody in your branch of the Capitol gets it, but you go over to the Senate and John Thune has every reason not to advance the mission as put forth by the president. What's the holdup on the SAVE Act?
Well, I mean, first of all, you've got a more conservative body in the Republicans in the House because we're closer to the people ostensibly, and I think that's why. But we voted it out 4 times now, the SAVE Act, Save America Act.
Right.
But when you get it to the Senate, you have people, you have right now a group of about 6 who don't want to do anything, and they'll claim that, well, we're institutionalists and so we don't want to get rid of the filibuster, etc., whatever it is. But there is something called Trump derangement syndrome. It's real. There are senators who hate Donald Trump so badly that they're willing to actually do irreparable, in my opinion, irreparable harm to the nation rather than swallowing their pride and delivering on something that 80% of the country wants. And I think that's it.
Wow. I want to remind the listeners, even though Andy Biggs is on the phone, he's on a private phone line, and our listener line is open, 928-854-5687, 928-854-KNTR. I hope they briefed you that we'd be taking phone calls, Congressman Biggs.
Well, I'd never heard that before.
That's funny. Or you can text in your question, 928-727-5566, 928-727-5566. Let's make this talk and text radio, not just listen radio, for the GOP candidate for Arizona Governor Andy Biggs. I haven't seen any poll numbers lately between you and your opponent. Where do you stand right now between today and election day and getting the nomination? What are the poll numbers like?
And for the primary?
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes.
Yeah,
the primary.
Yeah, Paul and Jim, the 2 polls came out mid and late last week, and I'm ahead by about 45% to 50% in the both those polls. And so and that's been fairly consistent to where I've been for a year and a half. And I'm grateful for that, but let's be honest. We need people to go to the polls and vote. I mean, go vote for the election, because having that as your polling or the surveys, and those are not mine, by the way, those are all independent polls.
Okay.
I haven't polled. I've not paid for any polls like that. And there's been 20 plus polls, and they're all kind of that, kind of like that score. But we need people to get to turn in their early ballot or just get their ballot returned, because during a midterm election, there's almost always a massive drop off in the participation rate. And we just can't have that. I mean, it's one thing to not really vote in the primary, but you should vote in the primary so you get the person that you want, but as your nominee, but we definitely need to get people to the polls for the general election, because that's how we will beat the current governor.
Again, we're talking with GOP candidate for Arizona Governor Andy Biggs on Speak Out. And yes, we are live, by the way. And how do you feel about early voting, Congressman Biggs?
Well, I mean, since 85% of Arizonans vote that way, important.
They do now. They haven't always.
And it wasn't that way when I first started voting. And even Jimmy Carter, bless his heart, he was wrong on 99% of things, but he got this right. He said a mail-in ballot is the easiest form to commit fraud, voter fraud with.
Mm-hmm.
And people on both sides of the aisle have said that for years, although nothing much has happened. But for me, early balloting should probably go back to where it was, which was for the disabled. It should probably go back to military, people who had to be out of the state. And the way it was, I mean, I actually had to be out of the state for an election, and I had to go in and fill out an affidavit. Right. And that was the way it was. And so the other aspect that you kick out when you do it this way is precinct voting. Precinct voting is very hard to do because we've got so many precincts in Arizona, but precinct voting used to be the way that we always voted. So people knew who you were because you got the same folks working that precinct.
Right.
And so when I went in to vote for the first time in my life was during Ronald Reagan, went to vote for Ronald Reagan and the going with my parents, and they said, oh, well, who do you have with you? Well, we got Andy. Hi, Andy. How are you? This is your first time, blah, blah, blah. They knew my parents. I was on their list, and that's what precinct voting does. And it cleans it up and makes it clear, gives you a better, in my opinion, an election with more integrity than you obviate a lot of the questions that people have that we have now.
Sure. First presidential candidate I voted for was Ronald Reagan when he ran against Mondale. So, but I wasn't 18 until, 82. I was 18. Mm. So I could vote in that midterm, but I couldn't vote for president yet.
Right.
Andy, how long have you been serving in Congress?
I'm in my fifth term. This is my 10th year in Congress.
Wow. Whew. Wow.
Sounds like you've qualified for some sort of pension or something when you put it that way. That's what Major League Baseball players get after 10 years, you know? They get that. They all strive for that 10-year MLB pension. But, I would agree with you as far as absentee ballots go and election day goes. I mean, there's a law that that your employer has to let you out of work so you can go vote. It seems a little moot now, doesn't it? But you have a month to vote, really? I mean, what is it next? Texting? Are we going to text in our vote? So
You laugh at that, but there have been ideas floated in Congress.
Oh, I imagine.
where people have talked about that. In fact, before I left for Congress, when I was in the state legislature, some people came in and had a meeting with me, and they wanted to do that. And I'm like, what? No. No.
Yeah, right. I mean, talk about foreign interference.
Yeah.
Holy moly. We do have a question off the KNTR Talk text line. This person wants to know, what is the candidate's take on the water issues between the upper and lower basin states? I did have this on my list. I love this question. Has Arizona done enough? And I've got a couple follow-up questions, but what do you think about the upper basin versus, it's almost like a versus now, lower basin, and it's one river. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous for me, but what's your answer on that question off our text line?
Well, so this is one I usually spend 2 or 3 hours on, so I'll try to go very quickly.
Yeah.
The current DEIS plan, in my opinion, is grossly unfair to the lower basin states, and when you grossly unfair to the lower basin states, Arizona takes the brunt of it. It's not fair.
What is DEIS, by the way?
Draft Environmental Impact Statement. This was put out by the Bureau of Reclamation. I'm sorry. That's Bureau of Reclamation has put that out. And what they've suggested, and this is an option, we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks about whether the Reclamation is going to put this out. But they're calling for no reductions in the upper basin states,
right,
and over 1 million acre feet, almost 1.5 million acre feet in the lower basin states, of which Arizona would take something like 900,000 acre feet. Now that's grossly unfair. So, so that's a huge problem, and I don't think that the governor has been on top of it. I don't think that she's met with anybody. Look, I met with our own state legislature, and they're trying to do something. We're trying to do something with the state legislature to ameliorate that problem. I've met with the Bureau of Reclamation multiple times. I have gotten on the horn. I was on the horn this morning with White House personnel talking to them about they need to do something on this. I was on the horn last week with the Department of War telling them about how important to preserve water is in Arizona.
Right.
Because it's a national security issue. I think it's a national food security issue. So I've met with Brooke Rollin. We've had conversations, and her team, we've had conversations. And all of that is to say is I am trying, and plus I've met with Secretary Burgum. I'm trying to get them all to come on and get give us a more rational program. I think Arizona will be stretched hard if they really truly give us that. But Arizona has other issues that this governor has just mishandled with regard to water, and we could spend, like I say, literally hours talking about it. I will tell you, I've been down in Yuma. I've met with the water folks, the ag folks down in Yuma. I've met with the Buckeye Water Conservation District. I've met with Rose. I've met with all of these districts, and I don't see the governor there. The governor's not there when I'm there.
Wow.
You know? And so that's my concern is I think we can resolve Arizona's water issues. We have so many interests. By the way, I've talked with some of the tribes regarding tribal water interests. So the point is, this governor seems to me to be disengaged from what is probably one of our most important, if not the most important, issue for a vibrant Arizona, and that is to resolve our water issues.
I don't know if you remember Fred Thompson. He was a U.S. senator. He was also an actor. He used to say, folks, common sense just ain't that common. All right? Now, especially this time of year, remember, we are 50 states united. In fact, before they called it the United States in the John Adams series, they would say, Jefferson would call them these states united. So what makes Colorado better than Arizona, better than Nevada, better than Utah? But, you know, I know folks in Colorado, from Colorado, that will tell me, hey, don't mess with me. We have 92% of our water capacity. You only have 25. You know, okay, well, why can't we average that? Is that not common sense, Andy?
It's totally common sense, and this is one of my beefs, is when I was talking to the reclamation staff, I mean, because you end up talking to a lot to the staff, as you know, I said Colorado, the upper basin doesn't even use all of their allotment. None of them do.
Right.
And they said, well, that's why we're not going to reduce them. I said, that doesn't even make sense.
Oh, brother.
I said, first of all, the population sphere is like 5-1 when you take in Southern California, Arizona, and Nevada. Mm-hmm. It's like a 5-1 population. And you're reducing us, and you're not touching them. And why are you not doing like a, I mean, it doesn't even have to be per capita, but if you would think that you would look at it and say, well, you guys, every time Arizona has extra water, mm-hmm. we actually recharge underneath aquifers in Arizona. So we're better than any other country in the world, any other place in the world.
Right.
As Israel comes over here to learn. But here's the deal. Common sense would tell you they're not even using their full allotment. We had to beg, squeeze, do everything I could with some others. Even Greg Stanton joined me in part of this, a Democrat down here. But we finally got them to release water from the Flaming Gorge.
Oh, wow.
And their additional federal reservoir facilities. They didn't release all they could have. They released a significant amount, but they still have, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of acre feet sitting in the Flaming Gorge and that series of reservoirs. The other thing I'll tell you, too, is, well, I'm glad we're working with California this time a little bit down here, and yes. I think California will continue to work with us. California, if they would save a portion, a fraction of what they put into the ocean every year to save the Delta Schmelt and other environmental stuff, if they would put them in their reservoir, guess what? They wouldn't need as much off the river, and the entire basin, the river basin, the system itself would be recharged a bit and made stronger. But we're dealing with California right now. So, I mean, these are the issues that have to be addressed. And I think Katie Hobbs is, with all due respect, incapable of doing it herself, and certainly incapable of getting the right people to the table.
Well, I think once you have Hoover Dam deadpooling and leaving a lot of electric customers in the dark, then maybe we look to Colorado, Wyoming, and Utah and say, hey, are you going to supply them power? Because you're the ones that have that resource. So I don't know what the answer is, but it just seems to me that we're all united in this fight.
Well, we should be. We should all be united. I will tell you that there are Colorado, Wyoming, Utah legislators in D.C. I get along with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But when we start talking water, with the exception of one, maybe two of them, they tell me, quit trying to steal our water. And I'm like, steal the water? We have an agreement signed in 1922. You guys cannot withhold it. You're the one stealing water. Anyway, you know, it devolves into a legal battle, but, you know, of words between friends. But, I mean, that's... it's a real thing. It's a real thing that has to be solved.
Well, we got to take our first break of the hour, and I'm surprised you didn't name Mike Lee in that friends and foe list right there. But no, he's a good man. It just seems like, yeah, you start talking about water, and holy cow, it's fight's on, right?
that's right.
All right.
I said, yeah, lots of good friends that are on the other side.
All right, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about the governor's office and what Andy Biggs plans to do if he should win the governor's office. And we're going to talk about the lieutenant governor's office. That's like a whole new
thing.
That's a fresh slate.
Jeez.
That's what I just found out. I want to talk about HB 2999. And as Andy feverishly Googles that, it's actually about giving tax breaks to developers. And that's going to save everybody in their quest for buying a home. It's going to save us all money. And guess who signed it? All right. When we come back on Speak Out, I'm Paul Lavoie. Jim Russell's with us. And, of course, our esteemed guest, Andy Biggs, GOP candidate for Arizona governor. Stay with us. We'll be right back on Speak Out.
Well, words get around in a small.
Well, see what happens when you get involved in a conversation, Jim. You're trying to cue up music and cues up the verse instead of the chorus. Man, I was trying to get into the Sean Hannity part of the song, uh-huh. right? Independence Day by Martina McBride. So let's check it out.
Let freedom.
That's the part I wanted. It used to be when you tuned into Hannity, if you're uh-huh. a loyal listener, that's what you heard. And that you knew Sean Hannity was coming on. So now he uses Florida Georgia Line, I believe. So anyway, Speak Out, brought to you in part by Mojave Mortgage. Love those guys. Also, Mojave Electric Cooperative by Bradley Chevrolet and Bradley Ford. Also, TWN Fiber Internet, Salmon's Air Conditioning, Western Arizona Regional Medical Center, and by Booby Falls Restaurant and Rodeo. Great pizza, sandwiches, and salads. Home to the Booby Dropper. That's the rodeo part. It's a little toy you put orders into, and it like outside of the grocery store.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of a little ride. It's a bull, and it bucks up and down. That's the restaurant and rodeo part right there. So those are our proud Speak Out sponsors, at least half of them anyway. And you can check out the archive. We'll have this posted with, of course, Congressman Andy Biggs, who's running for Arizona governor. We'll have it posted about 15 minutes after the show ends. How's that for service, Jim?
Boy, we're on it.
I know it. I know we are. We can go back to Andy Biggs, who is on the phone right now. And you got to look up HB 2999, and the governor signed it, and it was under the premise that it would help end the affordable housing crisis, if you will. I don't know what affordable is, but I know a lot of homes are not affordable to a lot of people right now. So anyway, it's giving tax incentive, I guess, to developers, and they're supposed to take that money that they saved on taxes for loans and give it back to the consumer. I just see it as flawed all the way around.
Yeah, how much could that be?
Yeah, right. How much are you going to share with me, Mr. Developer? Anyway, what is your take on the affordable housing crisis, as it's called?
Well, we do have a problem in Arizona because we're now one of the least affordable states in the country. Under Katie Hobbs. And when you talk to folks, the young people particularly, when I talk to young people coming out of college or just starting out, and they would like to get in a position to buy a home, but the first-time home buyer average age now is 40 years old, if you can believe that.
Wow, boy.
Part of the reason I think home buying is so important is because it actually, people, when they buy a home, they typically start creating families. They form families, and families are like the bedrock of our society. They help us keep our norms, our standards, our history, our values, the very notion of community. I mean, they're really important. Families are really important. And this, so it is a struggle. It really is a struggle. I think it's a legitimate question to ask. I was looking at this bill. I pulled up the bill during the break, and I'm like, I didn't have time to read it. It is a long bill. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, I'm not sure what it's going to do for affordability. I do know that you can do things, and you have to face the brutal facts. When I talk to developers, large and small, they will all tell me that 40% of the cost of a new home is permitting costs.
Huh. Really? I'm amazed.
That's amazing.
Yes. Huh. And I mean, that's been universal. I don't know if they've all got together in a smoke-filled room and they said that or what, but also I know is when I'm out talking to them individually or whatnot, they will tell me it's just about 40%. Well, I mean, when you think about that, if it's a $400,000 home, you take $160,000 out of there if you were to eliminate all of the permitting. I mean, and now you have a $240,000 home, and looks, that sounds like it's a lot more affordable. So that's a huge problem. Land scarcity in various parts of our state are a problem, and that didn't help. Governor Hobbs, she put a moratorium on building homes in two of the fastest growing communities in the country, Buckeye and Queen Creek. And for 3 years, there was almost no building permits or building going on in those areas because of the moratorium that she put on. Finally, the court said that's illegal. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. And now they've started issuing permits and going forward again. But here's the deal. You have a 3-year backlog of stock in those two previously fast-growing communities. So whether this thing works here, I'm looking at it as I think it's now called infrastructure finance districts or affordable finance districts. It's really interesting because it gives all the landowners, every landowner in whatever that district is, has to approve this district. But they develop revenue. It allows them to sell bonds related to that district. And that becomes very interesting to me. And that's why I hesitate to make a statement because I need to read that section of the bill to really say, okay, that works or that doesn't work.
I got you. I got a couple more topics to cover anyway. Especially the one that relates to Lieutenant Governor. Now, Arizonans aren't used to this. Arizonans are used to their Secretary of State, being a breath away from the governor's chair. And now, when or if you get the nomination to run against Katie Hobbs, you need to select a lieutenant governor. First, I want to ask, who's on your list of your top three? Your top three? No, I'm gonna provide a suggestion, and you might shoot it down, or you might say, you know what, that one's a real money maker, literally. And the other thing is, you have a blank slate when it comes to lieutenant governor. The office isn't even really, there's not even a sign on the door yet that I know of. What are the rules? What are the do's? What are the don'ts? What are the policies? Do you get to set those policies as governor?
Yeah, I mean, those are incredible questions because they're all right on the money. Look, I a number of months back, I was saying, I don't even know where the lieutenant governor's office would be in the complex. The tower there.
Yeah
the complex. I don't even know. But I can tell you what I do know, it is a fairly blank slate. They had some duties put in there to kind of pull them out in order to get the votes, to send it to the ballot and the voters approved. Mm-hmm. I tell you what I'm looking at. By the way, I've been approached by more than 65 people who have volunteered to serve as the lieutenant governor.
Was Matt Salmon one of them? That's a joke. That'd be a joke between me and Matt.
He was not. Anyway.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Wow.
what was contemplated in talking to the legislators who sponsored it? Really push this through, is they thought, well, maybe a lieutenant governor would be somebody that could actually run a state agency. And I think that's right. I think they need to have at least the capacity to do that. And it may be, you know, like we were talking briefly about me wanting to doge. So maybe somebody who has the capacity to doge, so they would actually have that responsibility. Then I'm looking for somebody, too, that I want them to have legislative experience. It would help if they had served in the state legislature and understand the process and the procedure. And I think that's important, and we could expand on that and tell you why if you want. But another one would be is it would be helpful if somebody to have a lieutenant governor who understands the nexus with the federal government, maybe even done some service in the federal government, but certainly knows the nexus. Why? Because when I was there in the legislature, we probably spent 75-80% of our time at policy making at the state level responding to mandates of the federal government. So those are things that I think are really important. You want someone who's articulate, someone who brings something to your ticket. You don't want somebody who wants to be governor so bad that they're going to be campaigning against me while I'm sitting in office. You know, you want collaboration if you follow me.
Sure.
I
do.
Yeah.
I would go even one better. Somebody with a knowledge of the education system, both including higher education. My choice as a power ticket, I'm going to just come out and say it, all right, Andy Biggs, would be Karen Taylor Robeson. I just think that would be a power ticket for Arizona, and it would bring in both conservatives for you and possibly moderates for KTR.
Well, thank you for that kind suggestion.
Okay.
And I will put that on my list.
So interesting. Not on your list yet. Okay, perfect.
I didn't say it wasn't on my list already.
I am good at putting words in people's mouths. So anyway, I want to go to break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about this idea of a Doge, because I hear other candidates talking the same thing, especially one of our candidates for state treasurer, and I don't know if we could have, you know, four or five Doges going on at once. It's kind of interesting how it's turned into a word in the English language too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that it's now part of the lexicon. I think that's terrific.
Exactly.
And now we have to execute better state and federally on that.
All right. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk all things Department of Government Efficiency, Arizona style, with Andy Biggs, gubernatorial candidate for Arizona, and congressman from Congressional District 5. Stay with us. We'll be right back on Speak Out. With Jim Russell, too.
Yes, indeed.
And a little bit of chicken fried. Cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio,
all right, looks like we're going to use the stinger this time, Jim, to come back. So anyway, back on Speak Out, I'm Paul Lavoie, and Jim Russell's with me. On the line, we have Congressman from CD5 and gubernatorial candidate from the state of Arizona, Andy Biggs. Welcome back to the show, Andy.
Thanks, guys. Good to be with you.
All right, you bet. And the conversation went so long off the air, talking about Uber and McDonald's and, you know, that sort of thing, that it didn't really have time to cue up the music. So, anyway, let's talk about Doge and the new – it's almost like the word of the year, word of the term anyway.
It's sort of become a verb.
What's your proposal to root out government inefficiencies, waste, fraud, and abuse?
Well, first of all, this is something that we might have the lieutenant governor work on. And I do know that if Elijah Norton becomes the treasurer, he is somebody that could help us do that as well. But the way you do it is, I actually wrote the state budget for a number of years, and so I know you need to know the lines and you need to know the programs. And when you do a Doge, you need to go into every program of the state and every state agency and every department. So you go through each one of them, and the first thing you do is you say, is there any duplication here? Number two, should we even be doing this? Is this something that we should be doing? Number three, are we delivering on this? Number four, is there access to fraud? And let me tell you, there will be lots of places where there's access to fraud. And then once you identify where the fraud is, you stop the fraud, arrest the fraudsters and prosecute them, and you start clawing back all of that money. That's really kind of it's that simple. But you're going to have to go have somebody who can go in and look at this from a technological point of view into the systems themselves, because there are ways, as you know, to hide it from audits, et cetera.
I think there's an additional component here, with all due respect. It seems like whenever you see somebody convicted of a white-collar crime like fraud, they get 2 or 3 years. And a little bit of restitution, and who knows if they ever paid it back. But shouldn't the penalties be a little stiffer?
Yeah, they should be. I mean, look, like I say, we're talking there are fraud rings. I don't know if you saw this, you guys, but
no.
one of the biggest federal Medicaid fraud rings was a group of 10 doctors out of Arizona.
Oh, man. Great.
And they just were indicted a number of weeks back. And we're talking several billion dollars.
Wow.
Allegedly that they ripped off from the federal government.
Hmm.
When we go after drug dealers and everything like that, we're going after every sale, we're going after every pill or whatever, mm-hmm. and we're stacking those penalties. And the reason you do it is twofold. Number one, you get specific deterrence. In other words, that person's not getting out for a while. They can't do something if they're selling. But number two is, you are creating a general deterrent. What happens is the people who are fraudsters, in our case fraudsters, they'll say, we don't want to do that because not in Arizona anyway, because the penalty is so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we could do that could be worth that.
Wow. Oh, go ahead, Jim.
AI tells us that one of the things you would be big on is looking to reduce electricity costs. How can you do that?
Yeah, especially with the Arizona Corporation Commission regulating those costs.
Yeah.
Well, here's what you have to do is sometimes what's happening is you got to work with the utility companies and get them in there and nudge and push and nudge and push. And I've kind of done that already. I think that, I don't know if you saw this, APS announced that they're going to, instead of mothballing, they're going to convert LaCholla to natural gas.
Oh.
And that, I think that's a year and a half out before that's complete. So you do stuff like that. It's bully pulpiting, quite frankly. And the other thing that you can do is work with the federal government on streamlining some of these Atomic Energy Commission regulations to make sure that we can get SMRs moving faster. The SMRs, you know, some people are saying that's a good 5 to 10 years before they're scalable. We want to incentivize to get that to go faster, because if it becomes scalable faster, then that will also bring down utility costs. Third thing that you do is you encourage businesses, if they're going to use our power, mm-hmm. you cannot encroach on current residential and commercial users or that wouldn't really grow otherwise. And that is something that the governor can weigh in on working with the legislature.
Is that to say, oh, and we only have a couple more minutes, is that to say to open up more projects like Palo Verde nuclear?
Absolutely.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely do that. And that's where the pressure points come. And the ACC, they have regulatory authority, but that doesn't mean that the legislature can't, I don't want to say regulate, but they can legislate policy that the ACC actually enforces. And that would include things like how about more natural gas facilities, less subsidies for wind. And by the way, the federal government just announced fully on, hallelujah, that they're not going to subsidize solar and wind. That means that you're going to see natural gas prices come down, and there's going to be reversion to natural gas, which is cheaper and far cleaner and is dependable and more reliable and also distributable.
Right.
Those are things you got
to
do.
Well, I was starting to think that solar and wind were going to be subsidized in perpetuity. So thanks for the news on that. Finally, Andy Biggs, why should the people of Mojave County, in our listening area anyway, vote for Andy Biggs for governor?
Well, for one thing, I've got a record that you can see, and the distinction between me and Katie Hobbs is night and day. We haven't really talked about Katie Hobbs, but she is as radical, quite frankly, as Mondani and Gavin Newsom in her own way. And the way you know that is not because of the number of vetoes she's done,
mm-hmm.
but what she has chosen to veto. She's anti-election integrity. She's open border policy. She got rid of the Border Security Task Force. She would have defunded it this year, but for the legislature, making sure that the strike force receives some funding to help the border. These are all things that I will champion, safety, security, affordability. I'm not going to be hiding out. I'll be all over the state. I love this state. I love going everywhere. I love Mojave County as well as part of our state. You guys are critical. I will not be a Maricopa County governor. I will be an all of Arizona governor. And we will, that promise will be made, and we will once again be an economic powerhouse in this country. And we'll become affordable to live again. We'll have job growth, wage growth, that is what every Arizonan, I believe, wants, except for some of the radical Democrat socialists that we've got running around. But everybody else agrees on those things.
Well, we're running out of time, but when you do get back up to Mojave County, stop in and see us. Hopefully it is during the general election campaign, and we'll talk about something very near and dear to Mojave County, which is uranium mining. I know you know
absolutely
a lot about that, too. All right, perfect.
Yeah,
Andy Biggs, thank you so much for joining us today on Speak Out. You made my Monday, that's for sure.
Very good.
Thanks, you guys.
All right, thank you so much. And good luck.
Take care.
And good luck.
Thanks.
All right. Wow, good interview, Jim.
Yes, indeed.
Good stuff. All right. We're going to take it straight up to Hannity at the top of the hour. I'm Paul Lavoie, Jim Russell with me, and I haven't seen the calendar. The problem with this system, the calendar's in my phone. and Andy Biggs was just on my phone. So,
oh.
All right, we're going to take it right up to the top of the hour. And Sean Hannity will be along after news and a short break. Of course, Hannity, all things martial arts, right?
Uh-huh.
That's Karate Man in our book. All right, Jim, thanks for being here on a Monday.
My pleasure as always.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow on Speak Out.
This is KNTR Talk, KJJJ HD2 Laughlin. Heard on 106.7 FM, 106.5, and 106.3. The voice of the free.